Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey guys, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime.
Hank is wearing a bikini today.
Yeah, it's summer.
It's summer. He's probably very hot because of all his fur. Oh, it's so hot. I'm going to complain about it every single week. I'm going to.
But you know what? I'm thankful it hasn't been in the hundreds for weeks. It has been,
though. Oh, not for weeks. No. But we went to IKEA and they had all their pumpkins out.
Oh.
And I was like, yes. Yes. Anyway, I'm ready. I'm ready for the fall.
You have enough fall decoration.
I do. And I'm done with the summer.
Okay.
Done with it.
Well, are you already going to decorate?
It's too hot. I have to go in the garage and get all my bins.
Okay. You're
so
right.
It's too hot to do that.
That does play a factor.
I usually hold off until like the end of August.
Okay.
I have that much self-control.
I can appreciate that.
If one of the pumpkins accidentally rolls from the garage into the house, okay. I can't control that. So.
Maybe light a fall candle.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I just bought summery spring candles, actually, because all my candles are fall and winter candles.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I have the same problem.
Know? Yeah.
It's just your, you know, when it's your favorite scent, you can't help it.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
But anywho, how's your day?
Good. Do you ever have those times, maybe it's just me, when you just kind of stare off in space and try to figure out what you were just thinking about 1 second ago?
I do that every second of my day.
It's like you're trying so hard and you're like, I don't know what I was just thinking. Yeah, that's how today was all day. Looking at my computer, I'm just looking at my computer and I'm like, please tell me what I was doing.
Brain fog. Like sometimes I do get that and I'm just like, I can't concentrate. There's like fog in my brain, like literally covering all the skills that I have.
Yeah.
Like all the normal skills that you would have, like you said, remembering what you were just thinking about, but no, can't function.
It was hard today. So if I start speaking slowly,
okay,
it's because
I
can't think. Okay, I'll do my best, but we can get into it.
Oh, aren't we a pair?
Yeah. Okay, so today we're talking about Christopher Donovan. He was born June 4th of 1982, and we're going to jump to his life in 2001.
Okay.
He was living in Surrey, England.
I love Surrey, England.
I knew you were going to say that.
I do.
As soon as I wrote that sentence, she's going to say, I love that.
But
yeah,
Surrey
I saw
so
pictures
gorgeous.
Of the area.
Okay, so the Holiday.
Yes.
That house that she lives in, Kate Winslet, that's in Surrey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fun fact.
So that's how beautiful it is.
Okay. So back to Christopher.
Okay. Back to Christopher.
He was a fun teenager with a heart of gold, 18 years old with a good head on his shoulders. He was close with his parents, Ray and Vi. He was one of 4 siblings with 2 brothers and a sister. He was said to be ordinary.
All right.
Nice and sensible.
Okay.
His parents call him loving and kind and very loyal to his friends. He had recently won an all expense paid trip to Paris for 2.
Whoa, Nelly.
From a radio station.
Amazing.
I know. And he gave the trip to his parents saying that they deserve it. Isn't that sweet?
So nice.
Yeah. His parents were Christians, and they took him and his siblings to church. And at the age of 15, Chris made his own decision to become a Christian. He aspired to join the army. And when his father took him to the barracks to talk about options of signing up, they suggested for him to become a police officer first. Once he's had that under his belt a couple years, then he can come back and reevaluate.
Interesting.
It was May of 2001, and Chris had just got off work. It was just like a week before his 19th birthday. So he was working at this pizza restaurant, and it's cute because he saw the opportunity for a competition. So he he rode a little motorbike delivering these pizzas, and he got a top delivery person.
That's amazing.
In that month.
You know, England was delivering food before we ever. Seriously.
Really?
Yeah. They started delivering food so long ago.
Hmm.
So that's cool that he was part of jump starting that.
Yeah. He wanted to be the top delivery guy. And that he was. It was close to midnight, and his brother Philip and a friend Richard met him there at the restaurant so that they could all walk home together. It was, I believe, a Friday night. As they were walking, they start singing a song out loud. They were singing Champagne Supernova.
Amazing.
By Oasis.
It's a good one.
It is. So two boys walk past them going the opposite direction. They stopped them and joked with them, saying that they were singing the song wrong, and they just kind of laughed about it. And then went their separate ways. Just a funny interaction. Mm-hmm. As they continued walking, they walk up atop of a hill where they approached a group of teenagers who had been partying and drinking. Remember, I said it's midnight.
Right.
So the group kind of spread apart as to allow the three young men to pass by them. Well, Philip walked in front of Richard and Chris and walking through the group first. And that's when one of the boys in the group punched Phil in the face and broke his nose.
Yikes.
Well, a brawl broke out.
I would say.
Yeah. Punches were thrown at Chris. And as he tried to defend himself, he fell to the ground in a fetal position.
Aww.
At this point, he was kicked repeatedly. See, can't talk. Repeatedly. The boys who started the fight took turns kicking him in the head and all over his body.
My God.
Chris was knocked unconscious. And by the time the group of teens took off, Chris was left lying in the roadway and he was run over by a car.
Oh my God.
Meanwhile, his brother Phil and his friend Richard watched the whole thing.
Oh, what?
Yeah. So the woman that was driving up the hill suddenly saw what she said looked like a pile of rags or like a big bean bag kind of thing.
No.
She didn't have time to react as there was a car next to her. In the lane next to her. So she tried to basically straddle this object between the tires of her car.
Oh my gosh.
Chris's
clothes. Was this after he was hit? Or this
no,
was
this
the time
was
he was
the
hit?
Yeah.
Oh God.
So Chris's clothes got snagged by something under the car and he was dragged for about 70 or 80 feet.
Stop, Lena.
I know. I don't like it.
This is horrific.
It is.
Oh.
So she realized she was dragging something, so she stopped her car and realized it was Chris's body.
Jesus.
So Chris, Philip, and Richard were all taken to the hospital. Chris's parents received a knock on the door and were notified that Chris had been involved in a fight and he was seriously injured. And
they're leaving some stuff out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say he was involved in a fight. Hit by a car and dragged.
Right.
But, you know, whatever
so,
you want to say.
Yeah. I don't know what all they were told, but his parents were like, they couldn't imagine, not their son. I mean, he was a good young man. Surely they had some other guy.
Right.
Chris and Phil's parents arrived to the hospital and saw Phil and Richard in the forensic lab, but they were not allowed to see Chris because he was about to be operated on.
Oh.
But ultimately, the doctors come out and say that Chris did not make it. He did not survive.
Like, he didn't survive the surgery, or he...
The whole thing. I mean, I don't know if they actually went into operation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or if he died beforehand.
Right. I don't know that.
So sad.
His parents had to demand to see their son in the coroner's office. And this is where they saw that half of his face was missing. It was very traumatic for his parents. I mean, of course.
Oh.
But they were told not to touch his body, but his father begged. He said that the last thing that Chris did before he left the house was kiss his father's forehead. Oh. And his father wanted to give him one last kiss on his forehead.
Oh.
So they allowed it, but he had to keep his hands behind his back. Colin Sutton, lead inspector of the Metropolitan Police, and Jack Reagan assisted with the investigation. When they came to speak to Chris's parents, they assured them that they were going to find out who did this. And Chris's mother's first reaction was like, yeah, right.
Well, yeah, right, because what had been done up until now.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure exactly. It had been days, right?
No.
Or a day?
Yeah, a day, pretty much. And so, but yeah, she couldn't believe the whole situation, like her son. And then,
yeah,
y'all aren't going to find these guys. But Inspector Sutton gave them a sense of strength to help them get through it. Like he was really the backbone of them getting through it.
And isn't that the point? Of law enforcement.
Right.
Like sometimes I hear about these times when they're not cooperating with families or mm-hmm. families don't feel like police are including them. And I totally understand they've got a job to do, but
right.
You should feel like someone's fighting for you. You don't have the strength to do that. You're grieving.
Right.
You have no idea what's going on.
Exactly.
And that's amazing that they felt that.
Yeah. And they've done several interviews and they give honor to this Inspector Sutton and Inspector Reagan. They really appreciate them and their words show.
I'm so glad.
So Phil and Richard were very helpful in the investigation as they were able to give specifics of what occurred.
Yeah. I mean, they were the only eyewitnesses, right?
Well,
not really.
I'm about to tell you. There were multiple witnesses.
Yeah, because there was a group of people.
There was a group of people, but the path home was on a sidewalk. And on one side of the sidewalk was a busy roadway. And on both sides of this roadway were residential houses.
The audacity.
Right.
Just the flagrance.
Exactly.
In
the open public.
Wow.
So as the occupants of the houses hear this commotion at midnight, they start peeping through their windows.
Yeah.
And each of them explained their perspective of the crime scene. They were able to give some descriptions like what color hair the people had and what color clothes they were wearing. An advertisement was put out asking for tips and information, and people started naming names of the attackers.
Wow.
The ages of the people in this group ranged from 15 years old to early 20s.
God almighty.
The next Saturday morning, some of them were arrested. So they had their names and details of color of clothing and such, but they did not have the description of what each individual wore that night. Like who was wearing what? Who was wearing the pink shirt?
Okay.
Who was wearing that white shirt?
Just a guy in a pink shirt.
Right. So they had to connect the dots on who was wearing what. And so we know it's very important to have as much information as possible in order to prove the involvement of each attacker. Mm-hmm. Without definite proof or a confession, all they could do was interview the people that they had arrested. The suspects were able to post bail and leave. Another big task was to determine and prove if Chris died as a result of the beating or as a result of the car hitting and dragging him.
Right.
This would be a 16-week process.
Wow.
As they had to remove Chris's brain and inspect and evaluate.
Oh, gosh.
So Chris's family had to wait at least 16 weeks to be able to bury his body.
It's so tough because it's like they want answers, mm-hmm. but so do law enforcement.
Yeah.
I mean, so do the medical examiners and like that stuff takes time to piece out. And
right.
Especially like when it comes to a court of law, you've got to know what you're going there for. You got to know what the cause of death really was.
Right. And these inspectors were doing their due diligence. I can never mm-hmm. say that word. Mm-hmm. So the pathologist was able to emphatically determine that the injuries from the neck up were due to the assault and the injuries from the neck down were from being hit by the car.
Right.
It was determined that the severe injuries to the head was what killed him.
Oh my God.
So Chris had a pattern of bruising on the top of his head that looked like it could be from the sole of a running or a training shoe. This seemed to be the fatal injury, but they couldn't quite piece together a scenario on how a shoe print could be on the top of his head. Like it would have been a strange angle to mm-hmm. have occurred on the top of his right. head. So also when inspectors were able to get the shoes and clothing from the six suspects that they had arrested and had under investigation, none of the soles of the shoes matched the print Chris's head. So inspectors Colin and Jack went back to the morgue and asked to see Chris's body again, knowing that bruising can be more visible or darker
right.
Days after death. Mm-hmm. So Colin had an aha moment. The marks on the top of his head matched the instep of the shoe, not the sole.
Oh.
So it was the inside of the shoe where the shoelaces are intercrossed on the side of the shoe, like where they go through the hole, they loop through the hole. Uh-huh. It was a print that matched that.
Oh.
And so this correlated with the witnesses that said that the attackers were taking turns kicking him like they were doing a penalty kick, like kicking a football.
Sick.
Inspector Colin found it impossible to determine and prove which shoe made the markings. And if you thought I wasn't going to talk about CCTV, you're wrong.
CCTV.
Yeah. So, of course, they looked at the CCTV around the area. Now, two of the boys that they had in question were seen on the cameras at the Stoneleigh train station. And this was how they determined and proved that these two were what they were wearing that night. Mm-hmm. Eventually, going further down the road, they were able to find cameras that showed the whole group of attackers together. Jeez.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, 2001?
2001, right. Yeah. So this was, I believe, business.
So this was just CCTV from businesses.
Businesses, like right.
Like it back in the day.
Exactly.
Like we used to get back in the day.
So they were questioning who exactly were the ones actually attacking Chris, Phil, and Richard. Having the video and confirming what each person was wearing, along with the witnesses telling them what the people punching and kicking were wearing, they were able to confirm which ones to charge.
Mm-hmm.
When questioned again, the suspects broke down and said, Okay, yes. I was there, but I didn't punch or kick him. Sure.
Of course.
It wasn't me.
Oh, yeah. That's
and they
the
were,
oldest one in the book.
Yeah, exactly. They're pointing fingers at each other like, oh, no, he did this and oh, I was just standing there, mm-hmm. whatever. One of the suspect's jackets had Phil's blood on
you
it.
You don't say. Oh. I was going to ask about blood evidence.
Yeah. This is the only piece of evidence that I heard about having blood on it.
Wow. The shoe?
You would think that the shoe did, and it may have, but that it wasn't reported on that I... in any of the reports that I read.
Okay.
So the guy that owned the jacket told inspectors that he let one of the other guys wear it that night.
Of course you did.
Well, he actually did. The guy that borrowed the jacket admitted he was wearing it. And he said, you know what? I am the one that punched Phil, but he denied taking part in beating Chris.
Okay.
And so... another fun fact, this guy wearing the black jacket, he was the youngest one, 15, and he is the one that started the brawl by punching Phil. And it was said that he was trying to like prove something of himself.
Right. Like I am with all these. I'm as tough as you, 20-year-olds.
Exactly.
Watch, I'll punch this guy walking past. Mm,
yeah. So Inspector Jack had the brilliant idea to take the suspect's clothing and dress each outfit on a mannequin. then place, it sounds like a lot of work and like, okay, where are you going with this? But it was very smart. So they took the mannequins under the street lamp at night. Because the perspectives mm-hmm. of each witness, like some people were like, oh, that was a white shirt. Oh, that was a cream colored right. shirt. So they had to, so they put them under the street lamp at night. Then they took pictures and video from each of the witnesses' windows.
Wow.
This would be able to give a visual to the jury as to what the witnesses saw. It just added a level of perspective that right. was very helpful. And I'll try to post the picture of the mannequins on our Instagram.
That was probably a little bit creepy. Looking out your window and seeing a bunch of mannequins
right.
dressed under the street.
Like, what's going on? Yeah.
But they're big into that. Like, I love British crime dramas. Mm-hmm. And I watched one where they did a reenactment of, like, they're big into reenactments over
oh,
there.
It's so smart.
I mean, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, as you were.
So Inspector Colin thought it best to concentrate on and charge the main three that they could confirm and prove was part of it mm-hmm. through all of the witnesses and all that. He said that if they try all six, he feared that they might lose the case.
Yeah.
The one wearing the black jacket with Phil's blood on it was one that was charged. And at first, there was controversy on if they should charge him since he only punched Phil. The inspectors had to convince that this guy should be labeled as a murderer as he is the one that started the fight with the punch to Phil's face, thus ending in mm-hmm. a murder.
Yeah.
And as Ray and Vi walk into the courtroom, they saw the parents of the guys who murdered their son. Mm. And you can imagine the well of emotions that the two of them felt. And they were angry, but they kept their composure. It wasn't until the end of the trial that they really let compassion take over. Mm-hmm. Being the Christian people that they were, they eventually felt compassion toward those parents, but realizing that they too were losing their children. Mm-hmm. It's a loss for all of them.
Yeah.
So Stephen Andrews, he was the oldest of the three on trial. He at 19 years old. He had a difficult upbringing. He grew up with a single mother and siblings, but it was said that he kind of fended for himself, but he had never had any run-ins with police mm-hmm. before this incident. Ray Seymour, he was 16. He had come from a good home, but he had recently started getting into trouble with police and experimenting with drugs and alcohol. It was confirmed that the two of these boys had taken crack cocaine along with alcohol that night.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. You know that.
Let's not do that.
Clouds your judgment.
Oh, a little bit.
The youngest boy being charged, the one wearing the black jacket, was 15 and he shall remain nameless. He asked to be able to sit in the well of the court next to his lawyer so that he could better understand the proceedings and such. Inspectors felt that this was a ruse to separate himself from the two older boys who had to sit in the dock where the accused have to sit. So the three of them never, through the whole trial, accepted responsibility. They admitted that they were there at the scene, but continued pointing fingers. Ray and Vi talk in TV interviews about how it felt to have to sit there for 6 weeks and listen to all the lies and manipulation.
Yeah.
Like, how can you be in that courtroom and see, you just have to have no heart to see his parents and not think to yourself, okay, I'll tell the truth.
Well, they're in self-preservation mode.
Well, true.
They don't want to go down.
Right.
At all.
And I've heard other murderers in interviews say that they felt like they can really get out of what they were going through by lying. And so, sure, this is where they were
Give it a shot. If it doesn't work, I'm going down anyways.
Right. The jury had a difficult time coming up with a decision. They still didn't really know who gave the fatal kick. Eventually, the decision was that they were guilty, and all three boys were convicted.
Wow.
The 15-year-old received life with a 6-year minimum.
Wow.
The 16-year-old got life with a 9-year minimum.
Jeez.
And the 19-year-old got life with a 10-year minimum, meaning that most likely they would all get out in those minimum years listed. And that's exactly what happened.
I knew you were going to say that.
So Ryan Seymour's father, after the trial, when the conviction came and all that, he walked up to Ray and apologized to him directly, face to face, man to man. And the two men embraced in a compassionate hug. On the way home from court, Ray looked at Vi and told her, "We have to forgive these young men."
Oh my gosh. They are so much better than me.
Ugh. She did not want to at first.
That was me. No, I don't have to.
Yeah, but she knew that if she held on to unforgiveness, that it would destroy her. And she even talks about how her granddaughter told her, "You're becoming mean, like you're just upset all the time." I don't know exactly what she told her, but basically.
So tough.
Right. And so she realized that she had to have forgiveness in her heart. And so, and she, in these interviews, she says that she realized that forgiveness is not about how you feel. It's a choice and it's a daily decision. In 2011, Ray and Vi had a meeting with the 15-year-old and who killed their son. And he then, at the meeting, he's 25 years old. And he told them that he had been a coward and that he wanted to tell them the truth in that moment at this meeting.
Okay.
10 years later.
Tell us.
Yeah. So he says they were smoking drugs. And he did what he did because of the lifestyle that he was trapped in at the time. And Vi and Ray didn't go into details in this TV interview of the events of who kicked and whatever. But he did admit it was...
To take part in
right,
it?
Right. Okay. So they talked to him for about 3 hours.
Wow.
And Vi told
Without
him...
Without strangling him?
Right. And Vi told him, "You know what? Why don't you just go and have the life that Chris couldn't have?"
Wow.
She said, "We forgive you." And he cried. The couple kept in touch with this guy for a few months. And Ray even got him a job. He got him work as an artist with a local charity.
Jeez.
And not long after that meeting, they met up with Stephen Andrews, the oldest one. He eventually told the Donovans that he didn't want to go out that night But the gang pestered and pestered him.
The gang?
Well,
like the other guys?
Right.
It wasn't actually
the group,
gang.
The friends. Okay. Yeah.
Got it.
They're like, come on, come on, come on. So he decided he's going to go out with them. He had had a job as a plasterer. And then all of a sudden, in a blink of an eye, he loses his whole life because of doing drugs and making a very bad mistake.
It only takes one bad decision.
Oh, yeah.
To lose it all.
And when you're on drugs, you can't make decisions.
True that.
So he asked if he could go to Chris's grave with the two of them. And they agreed.
Wow.
They
were,
right.
I'd be like, no.
Yeah.
You can't go there.
Bless their hearts.
Gosh.
And so they were accompanied by his probation officer. It was raining that day that they went, and Stephen got down on his knees and he cried. They They told him, get up and get on with your life. Like, don't be doing this. You need to live to the fullest because Chris can't.
Man.
March of 2013, the Donovans met up with Ryan Seymour. Vi describes him as a different kettle of fish.
She's so sweet.
I know. Saying that something about him actually really scared her.
Oh, my.
She says, I thought he was the most angry out of all of them. There was no real sorry from him, but at least he was truthful about what happened. He said that He said when the others ran off, he kept stomping on Chris's head. So he's the one with the fatal blow.
Yeah.
He kept stomping Chris's head. And when he heard Chris moaning, he stomped again. He said he saw the BMW that hit Chris coming toward him.
Jeez.
When he ran off. Ryan said that he thought Chris would get up after he left.
No, you did. When you inflict that much damage onto a human being, you have to know.
When you keep stomping his head until he stops moaning, he's probably not getting up. And that's exactly what, like, Ray couldn't help himself in this moment. And he asked Ryan, are you stupid?
Well, that's the thing, is he's like, he's willing to admit just enough, or like take responsibility for just enough that he feels good.
Right.
That he's taken responsibility for it.
Right.
But he's not gonna like
say
he's
that
gonna
he
be like,
him.
Well, I thought he would get up, so it's really on him.
Right. Right.
Jeez.
So Ryan says that he played video games like Grand Theft Auto. And if you aren't aware, there is a lot of that kind of behavior in the game. You're stealing cars, you're beating people up, you're kicking them. I mean, it's this behavior. It's like, and so he was living this virtual life in real life, thinking that it was
just like they'll come back to life. They have another life left.
Yeah.
This is just
exactly
a simulation.
So Ray says, well, that wasn't real life. Like, video games are not real life. And Ryan said that he had been living a very unreal life at the time and now realized it.
Oh, well, good.
Yeah. Ray and Vi share their story, and they are shining light into the darkness. They started the Christopher Donovan Trust. The two of them go out and talk to young people. They go to prisons and schools and talk about restorative justice. The two of them challenge these young people to stay on the right track. They really want people to realize that their actions affect other people's lives. And they're just really making a difference. And I just want to share, and yes, I'm about to get a little righteous here, okay?
Hallelujah.
But in one of my Bible devotions that I recently read, it talks about Joseph and how his brothers treated him and how they sold him to slavery. I know, not the same as murder. He could have gone down a dark path when he was sold into this slavery, but he chose to trust in God, just like the Donovans are trusting in God. Because of him trusting in God, He came out of slavery and was very successful, becoming a governor of Egypt. And he later reconnected with his brothers and forgave them. Joseph was in the position to get revenge on his brothers being so high up, but instead he provided for them because he was able to. He realized that God orchestrated this path that he went on. It was a difficult path, but he thanked God for the difficult times because it got him to where he was. I know it's difficult to thank God in such a difficult time, but for the Donovans, I mean, I applaud them for...
Well, it's like, what else are you going to do?
Right.
You could go down
You could go down a hot...
But it probably feels a lot better to have faith and...
Right. Well, and like she said, it's forgiveness is not a feeling. It's a choice every day. But anyway, I just bring that up. It's important to see that, yes, we all go through hard times in life, but we all have choices. Like Vi says, it's a daily choice, a choice to forgive or be bitter, a choice to love or hate, a choice to stay broken or make a difference. What are you going to choose? And
hate.
That's no, I choose Jesus.
You know, I'm reminded of the victim impact statements.
Oh,
from BK's sentencing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them were great. So great.
I only heard what you reported on.
Oh, yeah.
On our stories.
If you watched our stories that day, I was watching it all day. I felt so heavy that day just because it felt so like everybody was getting it out. And
that's why I feel like I can't watch it, because
I know. I had to, though.
Yeah.
You know, I had to. And because I don't want to say obsessed with psychopaths. I'm not obsessed with psychopaths. I'm fascinated by the fact that they don't feel anything.
Right.
I mean, he is so hollow. But back to the families.
No, agreed.
Some of the families were very angry and they had every right to say what they needed to say and take it out. But then there was like Zanna's mom.
Mm-hmm.
She talked about how, you know, Zanna led her to Jesus, and she said that, you know, I'll forgive you, but today's not the day.
Oh, wow.
Like, and I loved that because it was like, I'll forgive you in my own time.
Right.
Because I will, and that's what I'm going to do, but I'm not doing this for you, and I'm not telling you about
for
it.
For sure. Yeah.
Like, you don't need to
it's
know
about
it.
It's not for you, yeah.
It's not for you. And even if she had said she forgave him, he would just be over there blinking or not blinking.
Right. Would it be processed?
Yeah.
Like,
it's just, yeah, I cannot imagine. Cannot put myself in a person's shoes losing a child.
Yeah.
Just can't do it. I could say right now that I would be angry and burn it down, you know?
Yeah.
But like, would I? Is that the feeling you want to wake up to every day?
Right.
I just admire these parents.
Right. For making it a mission to turn it into something.
They went out of their way.
Yeah.
To reach out to these boys and...
Well, and help other young kids.
Wow.
So...
Well, I didn't expect to go to church, but thank you.
You're welcome.
For this.
You're welcome. I'm happy to bring you to church.
I just admire, like, their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could all have that perspective, even on the little things that don't go our way.
Yeah.
Kudos. Because I'm not that person. Like, I don't feel like I would have handled it that way with such grace and forgiveness.
Yeah.
Just the brutality.
I know.
Just the senselessness.
And that word was used over and over in these videos I watched. It's just a senseless.
They're just walking home.
Yeah.
In a group.
Having fun.
So they're safe. Like, you know, they all met up so they could walk home together.
Right.
So that they would be good. You know? Like,
yeah.
They get safely home.
Laughing and singing together. I mean, yeah.
Ugh. Well, thank you for telling his story.
Mm-hmm.
I just, it hurts.
Yeah, it does. It
hurts my heart. Fly high, Chris.
No.
On your angel wings. Flying over Surrey, beautiful Surrey. And hopefully you're eating a kebab up there. Delicious. Chicken shish. I like mine with lots of peppers, Chris. Oh. Do you like yours with lots of peppers, Chris?
Hmm.
Anyways, well, that was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.